Welcome to Nos Audientes. We're doing a special episode today, basically going to deal with the Steve Zakuani injury and the situation surrounding that, rather than try to pretend like that's not the focus of some other podcast, and we'll try to move on. But hopefully we can get to a point where we're comfortable moving on. I think that's the goal. I think that's probably been one of the hardest things for us as writers and for probably a lot of the fans, is that there's a certain sense that there's a reluctance to move on until you feel like it's been done its proper respects. And obviously Steve is his career it doesn't seem to be over, but for right now, this team does not have Steve Zakuani on it, and we felt like it was important to kind of deal with it in that way. So hopefully you guys are on board with us doing that. It's something I think we want to get stuff of our off our chest. I'm here with Aaron Campo, always. Dave Clark is here with us as well. We might be joined by Kevin McCauley, who's one of the contributors at SB Nation Soccer. And we have an interview with Arlo White also. So hopefully we'll gonna give you a good spectrum of information about Steve Zakuani and this situation and how it might play out. But anyway, just starting off, I mean, it seems like it makes sense to deal with this first from a Steve Zakuani perspective. Dave, you would seem to probably be the most knowledgeable about this whole situation. I mean, do you think, what's your expectation in terms of when you would expect to see Steve Zakuani back on the field?
Back on the field, I guess is kind of hard to determine. I mean, we know the surgery went well, and they always say that the first couple days and weeks of treatment are the ones that are the most important. Will Carroll actually tweeted that he expected it to be 6 to 8 months. Siggy Schmidt today indicated that it could be not quite the full season, and Casey Keller made a statement he could be back for the playoffs. All of those numbers are right around that same period of time. Sometime in October, Steve Zakuani could come back. What we do know, though, is that Steve Zakuani has been injured worse than this in the past, and he's come back to be a very good soccer player from it. So it's something, you kind of saw the way that he left the pitch. You kind of saw a demeanor from him that said, "All right, this is what it is, and what do I need to do now?" I kind of got that from him watching him on the stretcher as he left the pitch.
Yeah, in a weird way, it seems almost like if this was going to happen to one player on the Sounders, it seems like maybe Steve Zakuani is the player who's best equipped to handle something like this, just because he seems to have a genuinely positive attitude and outlook, and he's not someone who's going to kind of get down on himself. And he knows that it's sixth, and I'm sure he knows that he's not going to be back right away. And so he seems like someone who's well equipped to kind of take a long view of it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's been through a whole lot in his life, and I think that most people are aware of that. The motorcycle accident he had, I think, I get the impression that that really changed his perspective on things for the better. And he's just one of the more positive people that I think you're ever going to encounter, and he seems very determined to make his life work as best it can, and make the lives of other people turn out as well as they can. He's just a very focused and dedicated person. And so, I think you're right. Obviously, you don't want this to happen to anyone on any team, but I think if it is, yeah, he is probably more well equipped to come back strong from it, for sure.
Aaron talked about, the previous life experiences. I just think back to my first interview with him was in January of 2009, right around the Super Draft. And he did not sound like a 21-year-old when I talked to him. His maturity level and the way that he talked about life impressed me as much as the way that he talked about soccer. He talks about people in kind of a philosophical and a sociological sense that isn't typical of, say, the stereotype of an American athlete. He really has this maturity level, and a lot of it has to do with the motorcycle or accident that he had in the past. The way that he recovered from that was through a mental and spiritual strength that really it more than motivated him. It's what drives his very being. It's what he decided to start his own charity. It who he is grounded in that previous incident. And you kind of see it from, you know, we've had very limited tweets, very limited statements from him so far, but all of those are reflected in who he is as a person.
And, you know, speaking of Twitter, this was actually, that's a great segue, Dave, because one of the things that I have noticed, and I think that has gone noticed, is that there has just been this unbelievable outpouring of support for Steve on the Twitter. on the internet and on Twitter, and you know, you have everyone from Landon Donovan and Josie Altidore to you know, Alexi Lawless to, you know, all these former players, all these current players, fans from teams all over the country. You even had the Timbers Army, you know, sending him well wishes, and I just don't think that you would see that from that kind of outpouring of support for just any player. You know, Aaron, I mean, what is it that you think is about Zach Wanny that makes people really connect to him? I mean, it seemed like this resonated with people well beyond the Sounders universe.
Well, I think it's definitely a two-part sort of thing where, you know, as we talked about before, he's a very likable person. And, you know, there are people that don't like Steve Zach Wanny, I'm sure, but they're definitely in the minority. He just sort of radiates this, you know, this positive feeling. And, you know, he's just, by all accounts, a very good person. And I think that everyone that meets him likes him very much. And, you know, I know that y'all have talked to him before. I haven't had that opportunity, but you've both had nothing but positive things to say about him. And so, you know, I think that that's a big part of it. I also think, though, that, you know, players like Steve Zach Wanny are the hope of this league. And, you know, it's we don't have a history in MLS of having very young, talented players that are willing to stay here and develop and grow. And if you kind of look at the past, you've had, you know, be it Josie Altidore, Michael Bradley, or Benifio Haber, you know, whoever you want to talk about, you know, as soon as they seem to get a sniff of interest from a more prestigious league, they were gone. And, you know, that's understandable. I'm not blaming them at all, but, you know, he seems genuinely interested in developing his game in MLS. And we've seen that so much. You know, he was a very good, but very raw player his first year. And, you know, he was, in a lot of ways, watching him that first year was a lot like watching Sana Niasse, to where he just relied solely on his physical abilities. And then he developed a lot more last year. He became a lot more threatening, I think, as a crosser and, you know, definitely as a finisher. And then I think what we saw from him, you know, in the very limited amount of time we've seen him this year, was a player that is really beginning to blossom into a very special player. He had one play, I think it was against Houston, but it was kind of a you know, minor viral video amongst U.S. soccer fans, where he just did this absolutely ridiculously skillful little piece of footwork crossover in the box in the middle of three defenders. And, you know, that's not something we would have seen from him, I don't think, a year or two ago. And, you know, to have a player like that at his age that depends so much on his speed and agility to suffer an injury like that, it's bad for the Sounders, it's bad for Steve Zach Wanny, but it's really bad for the league, and I think a lot of people recognize that.
Yeah, it definitely seems like it's a blow to the league, and I don't know. What were you gonna say, Dave?
Well, you know, you did that great piece on Akron, and let's look at that. I mean, he's got a dozen people scattered around the league who played with him in college, who know him as, you know, they looked up to him because he was the upperclassman. People like Teal Bunbury and Kofi Sarkodie, and, you know, the list goes on. The Akron Stars are long, and all of those guys immediately exploded with support for him. And those guys are on teams scattered around the league as well. I mean, they all look up to him. You know, Teal Bunbury still refers to him as my big brother, Steve Zach Wanny. So that the league exploded with love and support for Steve, in some ways isn't surprising. I mean, you talk to those guys, you understand what they know and how they've connected with him over the years. It's some of them only played with him for 1 year, and yet still they maintain a relationship and see him as kind of this I don't know if mentor is the right word, but they definitely look up to him as a person who can help them develop not just their game, but who they are as people.
Yeah, no, then that is one of the things that was pretty remarkable, was how, you know, guys that had only played with him for a year, certainly guys that played with him for only 2 years, but even guys that hadn't played with him at all were really, you know, pretty close to him, and they were close to each other. I mean, it was actually a pretty remarkable thing how close the Akron players really were in terms of being friends and all that kind of stuff. And it seemed like really the person that was the glue for all that was probably Steve, and he was the first, you know, first of those Akron guys to really become a big MLS star, and, you know, he was a number one draft pick and all that kind of stuff. But it's a pretty remarkable thing, and I don't think it's any coincidence that Steve was the person that kind of blazed that trail. I mean, here's a guy who is, you know, living in England, comes over to the United States and plays at, you know, Akron wasn't a nobody program, but in terms of some guy, you know, coming from England, I guarantee the stories of Akron in England weren't exactly legendary in 2008 or whatever when he was being recruited. And, you know, for him to kind of lead the way there, I think really, you know, that it was a big thing. And I think a lot of that is just who he is. You know, he doesn't act like he's 23, is that right? I think he's 23.
23, yeah.
You know, he doesn't act like a 23-year-old in almost any way. He's very articulate, and he's he knows what he wants to say, and he says it in ways that are, you know, eloquent and really, you know, elaborative. I mean, we had a great interview with him on this show a few weeks ago where he was basically just talking tactics. And it was, you know, he's a guy who loves the sport, who loves life, who does all this stuff. And certainly, I mean, I don't want to talk like he's dead or something, because obviously he's very much not dead, and he, you know, could very well be coming back this year, as we said. But, you know, a lot of that, there's something that's been taken away, and it's been taken away not just from Sounders fans, but from the soccer community at large.
Yeah, I think the thing that was most upsetting to me, and, you know, the more that comes out about his injury, and the more that I you know, sort of look into similar injuries in the past, this doesn't seem to be as extreme a fear. But, you know, when it first happened, I know, Jeremiah, you and I went outside and had a conversation about how, you know, we legitimately thought there was a very good chance his career was over before we knew that, you know, what the injury specifically was to. If that had been an ankle injury or, you know, something of that regard, it very well could have been the end of the line. And I think that was what was so upsetting to a lot of people is, you know, Steve Zakuani is talented enough and driven enough to, I think, go on to Europe and play in a high-level league for a couple of years and make an impact. And, you know, even if his career hasn't been taken away from him, a year of development at a very, you know, crucial age has been. And I think that's the reason so many people are upset about it. It's not, you know, just that the Sounders have lost a great player and that Steve Zakuani is a very good person and that he's important to the league. You know, this could set his career in the larger sense back, and that's really unfortunate, you know, and especially because it came on something that very easily could have been avoided.
Yeah, and I think that is the thing that is bothersome, is that it's not even about the Sounders. What, you know, the Sounders will recover or they won't recover. It's not really, it's not the end of the world, obviously, if the Sounders win the Supporters Shield or win the MLS Cup or whatever. But it's, I mean, that's disappointing. But I think that a lot of people, myself included, I'm sure all of us are probably in this boat, but the thing, it is really too bad that this is a guy who was just literally coming into his own. You know, he had a great year last year, but this year really seemed like it was even going to be a better year. I mean, he just looks like a leader. He looks like someone who understands the game better. You know, he's constantly a threat every time he touches the ball. And you just wonder how much this sets his personal development or his personal soccer development back. Anyway, so that's probably a good place to to end that, we actually have an interview with Arlo White that's going to talk a little bit more about the incident itself, and he's going to get into some of the stuff surrounding it, and we'll be back to talk a little bit more about the aftermath and kind of where this is going to go from here.
I'm here with Arlo White. You were at the game. You saw what happened. I mean, what was your initial reaction? Did you know that it was awful right away?
No, I didn't. And that's something I've been thinking about all weekend, really, is that the angle that I saw the incident from was in the opposite half. That's where the booth was. And I'll be completely honest, Steve's reaction was so calm that it didn't give any clues if you hadn't seen the graphic nature of it, if you like. So when Petrescu, the referee, came over and showed the red card to Mullin, I mean, I realised it was a bad tackle, obviously. Then as an announcer, you go into that sort of mode where you're describing everything that's going on and the unfolding events. And I wasn't at that point because I was watching what was going on the field. I wasn't really looking at the replays. It was obvious it was a bad tackle. So when the stretcher came out, it was fairly obvious that something serious had happened. But the actual severity of the injury, no, I didn't know until really after the game. I did get a text message from the PR department saying that he'd been taken for X-rays, you know, for a possible fracture, and I gave that information out on the radio call. So in some respects, I'm glad I didn't know, because I had 87 minutes on my own in the booth, and obviously it was a deeply upsetting incident for everybody, not least of course Steve. So very, very difficult night and a difficult weekend.
And it seems like a lot of the discussion, fortunately or unfortunately, has kind of centered around MLS and this being kind of a physical league, and this being maybe indicative of that. I mean, do you get a sense that this is an MLS? I mean, or do you? And what's your perspective from that angle?
This sort of thing does happen everywhere, and you can point to the English Premier League last year, and it's a team. I'm not sure whether Steve knows Aaron Ramsey. Maybe Ramsey's a little bit younger, but in the Arsenal system. He had his leg broken by Ryan Shawcross last year. Eduardo for Arsenal, by Martin Taylor, if memory serves, at Birmingham. So these things do happen. I think my view of it is that you can be physical in football, and it demands it. You know, and Americans are looking for their style of play. You know, and I've talked to a few coaches about this, and a lot of them have said to me that we want to sort of mix in the technical side of play with that American work ethic. And by work ethic, it means high tempo and it means physical. But there is a difference, and it's a huge difference, between being physical and being utterly reckless. And what Brian Mullin turned himself into, really, in that situation, was a wrecking ball. He left the ground. He had no control over the consequences of that tackle, and that's reckless. There's nothing wrong with being physical, as long as you stay within the parameters of the rules of the laws of the game, and you have respect for your fellow professionals and their ability to earn a living. And I think that all went out of the window in that moment of madness. And that to me, to answer your question, you can be a physical league, you can be a competitive league, but you don't need to be as reckless as that.
And so along those same lines, I mean, do you think that it's important that MLS sends a message with this, that it's not as simple as saying, well, it was a reckless a challenge, so he gets three games? Or do you think that MLS really needs to say, look, this kind of recklessness has to be, you know, punished?
I think this kind of recklessness needs to be punished. And I wonder if... I haven't seen the Jonathan Leathers, David Ferreira incident. I understand it in terms of its recklessness, it wasn't anywhere near as serious as Mullin on Zakawani. But it's a very dark weekend for this league, because you've got a lot of good players in the league, and it's a league that's trying to put people in the stands and create interest. And we've seen the emergence of Agudelo, and I notice Agudelo is on, pardon the interruption, on ESPN. He's becoming part of the sporting conversation in the mainstream media. You know, what's happened down at Portland and their launch at Jeld-Wen Field has resonated into the mainstream media. And it's been a good few months, and then suddenly two of the brightest stars in the league are knocked out of play for the rest of the season. And frankly, I'm sure Jonathan Leathers is a nice man as well as Brian Mullin, but I wouldn't pay money to go and watch them play. I pay money to go and watch David Ferreira and Steve Zakawani play. So the league, whether they send a message out they have to be careful. I know they've given 10-game bans for various misdemeanors off and on the field in the past. Whether they go that far or not, I don't know. But in a way, maybe the Ferreira incident compounds what happened on Friday, and that snowball effect will lead to the league making a statement, and you know, a statement against, in this situation, Brian Mullen. And I think it's important, perhaps, that they do that. If it's three games, then we may as well all pack up and go home.
Right. All right. Well, I really appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Welcome back. We are joined now by Kevin McCauley. We're still here with Aaron Campo. I'm Jeremiah O'Shan and Dave Clark of Sound at Heart. It seems appropriate at this point to you may be listening to this after the punishment has already been handed down, but we did think it was important to at least talk about what a fair punishment is. And since Kevin is the only one here that's not a diehard Sounders fan, he might not even be a die soft Sounders fan. I think he's probably. Why don't we start off with you? And what do you think is the appropriate level of punishment for Brian Mullen?
Well, when people started talking about this, how long he should be suspended, and of course there were some people that said, you know, straight red card, the regular punishment of two or three games, it seems appropriate. And then, of course, there are some people on the other extreme who say, you know, ban the guy for the rest of the season. I think both are pretty unreasonable. So when people started talking about this, I decided to look at other bad challenges, either in MLS or other leagues and other suspensions in MLS, and kind of try to put this one in context. And there's a couple that I looked at. A lot of people know about the tackle that Ryan Shawcross from Stoke City made on Aaron Ramsey of Arsenal in the English Premier League. Broke Aaron Ramsey's leg. He was out for at least 6 months. And Ryan Shawcross got, I believe it was a 4-game suspension for that tackle. Another one that I looked at was a guy named Axel Witsel, plays for Standard Liège in Belgium. There was one tackle where he, it looked like, intentionally stomped down on a guy's leg and tried to break his leg. If that's what he was trying to do, and he was successful in this endeavor. And he ended up getting a 10-game suspension for that. And when I look at the Mullen challenge, I think that it's somewhere in between that, that it was a little more malicious than the Shawcross challenge and not nearly as malicious as the Axel Witsel challenge. So I think something like 5 or 6 games would be appropriate.
And so let me just ask anyone that really wants to answer this, so this will be a fun way to do it. I mean, do you think the appropriate thing to be doing is to be looking at other leagues? Do you think it's appropriate to look only at what other MLS punishments have been, or do you think it's within the realm? It's perfectly acceptable for Don Garber essentially to just kind of pick a punishment that he thinks is appropriate based on this act alone.
I personally think that I think that looking at other leagues and then looking at past MLS punishments is definitely a reasonable way to go. I think that there's a case to be made that because MLS maybe does have a problem with slightly more physical play, that you know, you could make an example of Brian Mullen, but for one, I don't really know if, you know, like Kevin was saying, you know, just by virtue of his examples, these challenges happen in every league, and, you know, nobody really thinks of Belgium as being an insanely physical, dirty league, but, you know, there you go. So, you know, I think that looking at what other leagues do, because you've got maybe more of a sample size to draw from, and then, you know, back at historical suspensions in MLS is probably the way to go.
So give us a game and fine level that you would think would be acceptable.
I think somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 to 6 games would be reasonable. I personally would not be upset. Well, I wouldn't be upset no matter what happens if it's that long, but, you know, I wouldn't think that maybe 8 to 10 would be outrageous. It would be a little excessive, but, you know, in that case, they would definitely be trying to make an example of Brian Mullen, and anything above 10 is definitely, for one, it's not especially likely to happen, and for two, I think doesn't really fit the crime.
Dave, go ahead.
I think it's important to know that the disciplinary committee is made up of former players, former coaches, and former referees. These are guys that, you know, they will look to other leagues because some of them probably played in other leagues, not that we know their names, and they'll look at MLS. And if it's 5 or 6 games, that means that what they're looking for is that it is a just punishment. And if they go beyond 6 games, I think that they're looking at making making this kind of a warning to other players to say, listen, we're going to crack down on this. It's no longer acceptable. So 5 or 6 games would be an acceptable thing based off of precedent. But if they go more than that, it's definitely a signal to the rest of the league that this kind of behavior, this retaliation, is no longer going to be accepted.
And so speaking of kind of along those lines, I guess we all pretty much agree that somewhere in the 5 to 8 game ban is probably a fair ban. I think probably the more interesting part of it is how much of a fine they put on this. And, you know, you figure if it's 5 games, that's 5 paychecks that he's losing. And that's somewhere in the neighborhood of $50,000, give or take a few bucks. And I mean, do you guys feel like $50,000 is an appropriate fine, or do you think that, you know, that's kind of where MLS can really send a message, is by saying, okay, well, you're being fined $50,000 because you're losing this, you're losing your paychecks, but then we're gonna throw on this additional fine. I mean, let's start with Kevin. I mean, what do you think that's an appropriate thing to do is to tack on a fine, or do you think that's starts getting excessive?
If he's losing his paychecks for the games that he's suspended, tacking an additional fine onto that, I think, would be excessive. Brian Mullen is paid well, but it's not like he's a multimillionaire. This is a guy who makes in the low 6 figures, which is, you know, not anything exceptional for a professional athlete, for a guy who isn't going to be able to do this, continue this career path more than a couple more years. You know, what he did was wrong. You know, we all know that what he did was wrong, and he deserves to get suspended for it. But if he's going to lose paychecks for these games that he's suspended, that's more than enough financial punishment.
Dave, do you feel like the pay? I'm assuming that if you get suspended, that he's going to lose the paychecks. I just that seems like how it is in every league in the world. But I mean, do you feel like an additional fine is warranted, or do you think it's?
No, he doesn't need an additional fine. I mean, he's going to lose a significant amount of money. MLS players are, one of the unique aspects is they aren't paid a ton of money. They do live in the neighborhoods that you and I live in. So, I mean, imagine if your next door neighbor lost, 20% of their salary for the year. Would that be a significant fine for them? Yes. So
right.
A 5-6 game suspension will result in him losing a very significant portion of his salary.
I ran the numbers from based on his what he made last year. We're talking if he gets 5 games, we're talking about essentially $27,000 that's he's being fined, which seems like a pretty significant amount of money. Aaron, do you have a opinion on the fine aspect?
Yeah, I think that, you know, fines should be reserved for leagues where players are making, I don't want to say obscene amounts of money, but more money than what they're making in MLS. I don't, you know, I'm not interested in Brian Mullen's personal suffering. You know, I'm not, I want him to be punished fairly, but I don't want him to lose more than the paychecks of the games he's fined for. You know, if there's Schadenfreude involved in this, from my perspective, it's not going to come in him losing money. And, and it's just, to me, that's just a really uncomfortable door that's being opened if you do that. And I'm just, you know, I'm really not comfortable in punishing people through financial means in addition to losing their paychecks in this league. It seems very out of step with what the actual role of the league should be in the case of MLS.
If I can just chime in here real quick, I don't even necessarily want the guy to lose his game checks for the games he's suspended. I just want him to not be allowed to play football for a while.
Yeah, I would actually tend to agree with that.
And I guess I kind of agree in a sense, but I think that the important part of this, and maybe I'm being too harsh, and certainly if you guys don't agree with me, I'm happy to hear your guys' opinion, but I don't necessarily think that this is about just punishing Brian Mullen. I'm not trying to say that the guy needs to be brought out into the city center and executed or anything really crazy. Figuratively, I'm saying these things, but I think that there, it does have to be a certain example that's set, that it's that the league, if the league is really serious about clamping down on these kinds of plays, and let's face it, you know, Brian Mullen says that this is something he's done hundreds of times. I don't think he's literally done tackles as late as he did in this particular instance at late hundreds of times, but he's
I hope he hasn't done it a dozen times.
No, I hope he hasn't done it more than a handful of times. I agree, but I think that there's a mindset there that quote kind of showcased, and I think it is important to kind of send a message to the league that says, look, you know, we realize that we've prided ourselves on being a physical league and whatnot, but there has to be a line, and if you cross it, there's going to be serious consequences.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely do see that perspective, and I think that you kind of get to the heart of the issue, is that I genuinely don't think, at least at the time, you know, when the statement was made, that Brian Mullen thought he did anything wrong. I think that he legitimately thought that it was just, you know, an unfortunate circumstance. And, you know, people need to be more self-aware if that's the case. And the difference between a tackle that's that late and a tackle that's just maybe a little bit hard and, you know, bookable is not a difference of that much time. But, you know, if you cause people to maybe second guess themselves before making challenges, then it's going to have a positive impact and it's going to prevent things like that. So, you know, I understand where you're coming from. And I mean, I guess if he does lose his game checks from those games that he suspended, I'm not going to be upset, but I just want MLS to fix things. And, if that, you know, if the missing the games is enough, then that's great.
Well, I mean, my perspective on it is, I think it's all fine and good for MLS to say that they aren't going to support this kind of play, that they're going to, you know, issue red cards and that they're going to do things like this. But at some point, I think they need to put their foot down and they just need to, at some point, the league needs to stand up and say, look, this can't be condoned. We can't have players having their legs broken. We don't want to be this kind of league. And I don't think that they are this kind of league, but I think that this, you know, this is a point where they can stand up and really show that. But, you know, maybe that's asking too much. Go ahead.
If any league is this kind of league, MLS is that kind of league.
Well, I want to move this into a little bit more of a philosophical point of view about the tackle. Dave and I spent a lot of time talking about this on Twitter yesterday. Graham, another one of the great bloggers on SB Nation Soccer, and I were talking about this. And I'm just curious on your guys' philosophy. I'll start with Dave. You know, how do you go about judging this? Do you judge it based purely on it was a foul because, you know, he came in late, or do you have to look at the results and do you have to look at the fact that it looked like it was a retaliatory foul? I mean, how do you go about judging what's an appropriate punishment? I mean, do you have to come up with a black and white rule, do you think?
I don't think it can be black and white. As I was saying to you when we chatted, is that it's you can't do the punishment merely on what the resulting injury was. If that was the case, then let's say some random flailing hand wound up in a guy's face, but it poked a guy's eye out. Are you going to suspend him for the rest of his life? No, because he didn't intend to hit him in the face. He didn't intend to poke the guy's eye out. Brian Mullen didn't intend to break Steve Zakuani's legs. He intended to go in hard, late. He intended to hurt Steve Zakuani. I mean, I think that was clear. He didn't intend to injure him, though. So the punishment has to take that into account. But at the same point, as you were saying, whether or not he intended it, that was the result. So that also has to be factored in a little bit. And I think that's where we came up with the, you know, as most of us said, kind of a 5-6-7, you know, game suspension would be appropriate, because the intent was to go in late. It was to retaliate. It was to hurt Steve Zakuani. There was, I don't think anybody can say that Brian Mullen intended to break Steve Zakuani's leg, though.
No, I don't think it is about him intending to break his leg, but to me, I think you have to factor in the result of the action. I don't know that you have to judge it based solely on the result of the action. I don't think at all that you should base it solely on the result of the action. But I think you have to consider that as part of it. Kevin, what do you kind of feel in terms of what the appropriate parts of this to look at are?
Well, we were talking about this earlier today at SB Nation. We were talking to Andrew Thomas, one of the new bloggers at SB Nation, and he brought up a really good point about why punishing based on the result doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. And the point he made was the worst tackle that any of us have seen in world football this year is not the Brian Mullen tackle and Steve Zakuani. The worst one that I think any of us have seen was the one that Carl Henry made, the Wolves player against Wigan, where he actually sent a guy basically flying in the air, and this dude jumped. I forgot who he tackled, but the guy literally jumped over him and did a flip to avoid getting his leg broken, because that's exactly what was going to happen. And it was honestly the worst tackle I've ever seen. And it was the kind of tackle where 9 times out of 10, he is going to seriously injure somebody, and he probably should have gotten a suspension of 5 or 6 games for it. Instead, he gets the regular straight red card 3-game suspension when he deserved a lot more. You talked about Brian Mullen and, you know, not really intending to injure, and you said, well, he intended to hurt. I think that's a little too extreme, too. I think that Brian Mullen's intent was more to intimidate more than anything else, to kind of send the message like, you know, hey, you mess with me, I'm not afraid to go in late. And that was really the intent, to send a message that, you know, he's a tough player and he's going to play Zakuani tough all night. You know, that's why you do something like that in the third minute of a game. But I think that really that's why you can't take the result into account, because I've seen so many tackles that are actually worse than Brian Mullen's that somehow didn't seriously injure somebody.
I think that I agree with you in theory that people get away with you know, far more egregious offenses because there's not a negative outcome. But I honestly think that the answer, instead of not taking into account, you know, the outcome in a situation like this, is to start punishing those tackles, you know, and giving them the making the punitive action for tackles like that fit the crime. And, you know, I think the reason that you do, at least to a certain extent, have to take into account the severity of Zakuani's injury is that I think that people have to realize that, you know, there are consequences to things that they do. And if you do something like that and someone doesn't get injured, maybe that consequence is, you know, a red card and a 3-game suspension. But if you do something like that and someone does get injured, you know, I think it's reasonable to maybe tack on a few extra games to that. And the example I used is that, you know, and it's, I mean, obviously it's orders of magnitude different. But if I'm driving and I think that I can beat a red light and, you know, I get pulled over because I don't, and, you know, I get a ticket or I get a red light camera ticket in the mail or whatever. If I hit a pedestrian because I don't beat the red light, the action is the same. I mean, I'm not trying to hit a pedestrian, but the consequences are graver. And so, you know, the punishment has to be. And, you know, obviously there are different situations, but it's, you know, I think it's fair to take it into account. I don't think it's fair to take it into account as much as a lot of people do. You know, I've heard people calling for Mullen to be suspended as long as Zakuani's out. And I think that's a little much to make an understatement.
So to kind of tie this up, I mean, do you guys see this as a moment that's important in MLS? Do you feel like there's that you're going to have a vested interest in what the result of, you know, whatever MLS decides? Do you feel like that says anything, or do you feel like you're willing to kind of accept whatever MLS doles out? I'd probably like to end with Kevin on this, so start off with Aaron. I mean, what do you feel like you're going to get out of this emotionally whenever this comes down, this decision?
You know, I mean, because I am a Sounders fan, Steve Zakuani is one of my favorite players just in sports in general. I love watching him. He's kind of a rare player in this league in terms of his skill set. And so, you know, yeah, I do have some emotional investment in Brian Mullen's punishment. And, you know, I think that I can largely divorce my emotional investment from maybe from my opinions on what his punishment should be to a certain extent. But, you know, if he ended up for some crazy reason being suspended for the rest of the season, I don't think I would be unhappy. But that being said, I think, you know, more to the spirit of your question is that do I think, you know, that this is sort of a watershed moment in terms of where MLS goes from here in terms of physical play? I don't at all. Part of that is because I don't have a lot of faith in MLS to consistently enforce their rules and to, you know, stop fostering an environment of physical play. And, you know, part of that is just because I think this is a very high-profile event. People are paying more attention to it now, but, you know, 2 or 3 weeks from now, it's just, I don't think it's going to be as big a story to people that aren't Sounders fans. And so, you know, it might have an impact, but I don't think it's going to be a significant one.
Dave, what's your emotional investment or your kind of your expectation in terms of this whole situation?
I'm kind of with Aaron. Well, I would like it to be a watershed moment, and in some ways it will be, just because the league is still in that growth period where every year is the greatest year in the history of MLS. And so this will be, you know, the greatest signal of MLS about physical play and until the next signal about MLS and physical play. At the same point, you know, it's like, unless they go with an absurdly long suspension, which I find highly unlikely, it's not going to be a watershed moment. A reasonable suspension is a reasonable suspension, and maybe they need to give more of them. You know, Jonathan Leathers, for example. The fact is they need, you know, one incident isn't going to change the way that the entire league plays.
So, like I said, the reason I wanted to finish off with Kevin on this was because I feel like I think Dave, me, and Aaron are all pretty emotionally invested in this. As someone who has a little bit more of an emotional detachment from this punishment, this whole situation, Kevin, what do you feel like is gonna? What do you think we're gonna learn about the league? What do you think are we gonna learn anything about the league when this decision is handed down?
Well, this is going to sound outrageously pessimistic, but I think that if anybody is a really big fan of MLS, gets really emotionally invested in any kind of decision the league makes, it's going to be really bad for their mental health over the long term, because most of the things that MLS does, they are really arbitrary or, in some cases, dumb. This is not to say that I don't think MLS does a good job in a lot of areas. There's lots of things about the league that are great. Obviously, I wouldn't be a fan if there weren't positives, but there are things that they screw up over and over and over again, and they make lots of really weird decisions. So while I think they're going to do the right thing here, and I think that the suspension is going to be less than something outrageous, less than, you know, 10 games and somewhere more than the regular three, if he only gets 3 games or if he does get 10 games, I'm not going to be surprised and I'm not going to be that upset about it, because if I got that worked up about it, I would get worked up about bad decisions MLS made a lot, and then I would probably be in a mental institution.
Well, and so your expectation is to be, you're essentially resigned to whatever their decision is, as long as it's not crazy or.
Yeah, as long as it's not like truly outrageous, like something more than 10 games, I think would be truly outrageous.
Well, and I guess let me finish it off with this. What do you think? Obviously, Sounders fans are treating this like it's a huge deal. You know, I think most Sounders fans are actually they're very emotionally interested in what the punishment was or is going to be. Do you think people around the league care that much? Do you think that they are watching this with anywhere near the interest that Sounders fans are?
No, not at all. I think that the only real emotional investment that most people have in this, or it's not even an emotional investment, the only reason most people care is because they're interested in how the Rapids will be affected. And I think the reason most people are looking at Zach Iwani's recovery is because, first of all, nobody likes to see anybody with a bad injury, and everybody likes to see people that get bad injuries come back. And people are interested to see how the Sounders are going to be affected. Personally, it's not a huge deal to me, and I think it's the case for most of the rest of the league. There's going to be the outliers, the people that are that feel very, very strongly about this, that if he only gets three games, that are going to be really mad, even people that aren't Sounders fans, but I think that those people are a minority.
All right, well, I think I probably agree, unfortunately, with Kevin, but I will admit that I will be pretty disappointed. If it's less than five games, I think I'm going to be pretty... I have a feeling that... I don't know that it's going to change my opinion of the league, but it would be a pretty disappointing thing that the league sees something like this happen and is just kind of willing to treat it as if it was any other tackle, any other player. I mean, I do think that the fact that it was a, you know, an important player to the league, that it was such a horrific injury. I mean, I just got to believe that all those things will be taken into account. But anyway, maybe I'm a bad person for that. Well, thanks for joining us today. Hopefully you found this to be as cathartic as we did. We're going to resume our regular schedule. We'll have another show this week, presumably Thursday or Friday. So hopefully you enjoyed this, and we can start talking about things that are not so depressing. Thanks a lot.